shits. Yeah. CMD the Paris. What up? Yo, Bell Swedenberg, DJ Brands on the beat. What? Let's go. Y'all ready for this shit? Check it. Yo.
Guys, welcome to the Pure Progress Lifestyle, where the only thing that matters is progress. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Dr. Stephen Neff, or Stefan Neff, my mistake. Stefan has an amazing ability to break down to mental health issues, addictions, all that jazz. He simplifies it for you, so that way you can understand and you're able to comprehend what's going on in your own mind if you can't. Because most of us have a hard time solving it. Stefan, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
No, an absolute honor and a privilege to be here. And I have not yet met a host who actually puts a tire on to honor me, to have your Neff cap on. I am impressed. Impressed. Hey, unfortunately. Perfect. No, not related to the branch there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, no, well,
to be honest, I saw this in a store and I just a few years ago, I was like, "Oh, I like that hat." It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
How the universe does work like that.
And here I am. Well, I'm honored. And we can take this beautiful interview anywhere we want, and I'm here for your audience. Where shall we start? Which part shall we dive into?
So many things to cover. So let's just jump into it. What are you a doctor of?
I'm an anesthetist. Mm-hmm. So in America, anesthesiologist. So we are the kind of sort of special forces in the medical world. Whenever mm-hmm. shit happens, we get pulled in. If that is someone really, really sick, or if someone has been shot, if someone, you know, a woman screaming in labor, these are the kind of times when we turn up. But otherwise, we sort of the guys quietly in the background. And I love the job. It's a beautiful, beautiful position. But having said that, that's a typical allopathic medicine, meaning sort of the classic traditional medicine model, which is beautiful, but it doesn't necessarily lend itself so well when it comes to mental health or when it comes to more the complex things that are happening within the human body. Right. So I've also started to become a functional medicine practitioner and to actually look at a bit more at the root causes of what makes us sick, both physically as well as mentally. Mm-hmm. And there is a hell of a lot that we can do. And it was really, it's this new journey that adds another string to my bow. When I look at mental health problems, when I look at the many, many, many people out there who are suffering. Mm-hmm. And that's so crazy. I mean, when we are looking at ourselves, we only see how bad we feel. Mm-hmm. And certainly when I was in the darkness of PTSD and depression, I could not imagine that anyone else feels like that. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It only can be me who is really so bad off. And when you don't look at the figures, that's not true. Right. The lifetime chance that anyone out there listening will get a major depressive episode is about 1 in 3. Mm. Chances of PTSD are tremendous. It depends upon the lifestyle, obviously, you live. If you are in a very exposed environment, let that be a law enforcement, a soldier, let it be people who are at higher risk of major incidences or accidents. My goodness, there is a high percentage of these people out there who suffer from PTSD that's often undiagnosed and more often even untreated, even if it is diagnosed.
Right.
So there's so many people out there. Chemical addiction, 1 in 3, 1 in 4. Mm-hmm. So when we look at that, it's actually normal to have a challenge in your life. And I think if we can start off with that, if we accept that virtually everyone out there we are talking to, whatever mask they put up, that they are broken inside, I think that's a pretty good starting point.
Mm. So then let's capitalize on the broken inside. obviously you're really big with the mental health. What gets you started in that? I mean, I know the answer, but it's always easier to explain it.
Oh, shit, yeah. It's hard, isn't it? I didn't have a massively bad childhood. I had a typical childhood after the 60s, 70s, mom and dad divorced when I was four, single, mom, not much money, probably rather on the poor side. Mm. So probably there were some abandonment issues there. Yeah. But nothing brutal, nothing, no one beat the hell out of me. Certainly in my childhood. But then when I was 13, I was wrong place, wrong time, and ended up in a gang assault. These guys just had nothing better to do, so they beat the hell out of me. And it left me with PTSD, ultimately. Let's call it what it is. But at that time, it wasn't recognized as such. And there was certainly no help and recognition as such out there. So in my mind, I very quickly resolved to the core belief that there will be no help for me out there. Mm-hmm. Because after I was bleeding and picked myself up and I went into a public train, a tram in Mannheim, and no one helped me. They just all looked away. The driver looked away. And it was at that moment, I think it crystallized in my mind, hey, that's fine. From now on, you are alone. There will no one be able to help you. And I think this was, with hindsight, actually probably one of the more damaging core beliefs. Otherwise, I would have later on in my life maybe sought help earlier or maybe been more open to expose myself to others. Instead, I looked at the role models around, and there was Bruce Willis in Die Hard, and there was Mel Gibson, Lethal Weapon, the anti-heroes of the 80s. Yeah. And I found these guys cool. And so I became a martial artist because I put the ringleader behind bars. He threatened to kill me on his release. So from then on, during the daytime, I was at school. Then thereafter, I was either working, stacking wood in a hardware shop to make money,
right,
and was training. Mm-hmm. So I became a very dark young man. And these were, I mean, they broke out my teeth. And when you're a teenager, they don't give you permanent caps, crowns or so, because you're still growing. So therefore I had these kind of half reliable teeth in there. And from now on then one would fall out. And you can imagine what that does to the confidence of a young teenager.
Right.
So
yes,
these were bloody dark times.
Yeah.
And then for about 5 years, and physically I changed into Rambo. My body was very, very chiseled and I think I couldn't be proud of that, but mentally, oh boy. But then I moved on to another town. I started studying medicine, and it became clear to me in the times before internet, these guys will never find me. The second thing I found was girls, because by now my teeth were fixed. And lastly, I found alcohol. Mm-hmm. And the alcohol was an amazing, amazing gift for me, for someone who had lived in the darkness for literally 5 years.
Right.
And suddenly the tension came off me. Suddenly there was this laughter coming out of me. Mm-hmm. This new person came out. A person who was a bit more cocky, a bit more self-assured, which together with my body, was right, quite a draw factor for the girls. So actually alcohol was initially a really good friend.
Yes.
And that is important to realize, because many a times in our lives, we come upon something that stops our pain. And that is so beautiful at the time for our suffering, because there is hell going on in most people in their head. And then suddenly there is this one moment where you think, oh my God, where have you been all my life? What was that? Oh, alcohol. Cool. Or shopping. Ooh. Or people pleasing, or being a workaholic, or gambling, or pornography. it's a myriad of things, often behaviors, mm-hmm. Or indeed physical things like drugs. It is so easy that we rely on that beautiful relief that we get from that one thing. And that was certainly the case with me. So alcohol became very much part of my life. And again, you rephrase it for yourself. You reframe the whole thing, to say, ooh, I'm a very social person. And I was a very social person. I love to cook. So I had often people around. And of course I was cooking. Plus there was copious amounts of wine around. It was these kind of classic. Hey, as a good host, I of course need to bring alcohol to the table. But I was the guy who was making sure that I always had a glass full and that I was always at a bar, etc. So there were early warning signs there. But ultimately, I mean, you can imagine if you only rely on one coping mechanism, i.e. alcohol, or in my case, work, where I was a workaholic before I became an alcoholic. If you only rely on these two things, well, sooner or later, that will not work.
Right.
And that was with me. And more trauma came. That's what life does to you. And ultimately, I came to a point in my 40s where I was just really a mess. I was in a very dark place.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in rehab. I ended up 4 weeks inpatient rehab. And that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And to this day, I insist that if I was in power for an education system, I would enforce that every teenager needs to go 4 weeks into rehab, regardless where they are at, because it was such a beautiful protected bubble in which you could explore your own feelings, your own often negative emotions, your core beliefs. You could come out with things that you didn't even know were the truth for you. So it was an incredible expansion or incredible explosion of my understanding of myself. And that is something that most people don't get the privilege to undergo.
Why do you think that is?
Because often enough people don't end up that low. They just end up in that continuous suffering until they're coming to a point, often in their 40s, 50s, sometimes 60s, mm-hmm. where suddenly all hell breaks loose and they think, was that it? Is that my life? And suddenly you get people who are 30 years married, get divorced, and men and women are doing crazy things because they had never really delved in the kind of self-improvement, self-love, self-looking after yourself kind of space.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and ladies first.
It's interesting you bring that point up with, you know, physical fitness.
Mm.
It's just like you can do all that and you can look great for sure, but it's only like half the battle because what's going on mentally, it's still just chaos in there. Like you get to feel good. You know, I know for personally, if I work out, I get to feel good for a couple of hours. But then that low point will come back if I don't deal with my own shit.
Is it not? But often enough, when you are in a life of escaping your reality, if that is really subconsciously what you always do, mm-hmm. then you often throw those things, even the sport, etc., by the wayside, because it is... you know, if you have an 8 or 10 hour job and then some commute, many people just are tired. And then because they have not been dealing with self-love, let's call it like that, they don't know the benefits of the exercise. They mm-hmm. only see the hard chore of, yeah, God, I've got to go to the gym now, not realizing that they could very easily do something active that does not imply now 2 hours somewhere in a gym and right. driving half an hour there and back, but rather to actually, you know, hey, I mow the lawns now, but I do it with with exercise, with, or I dance in the kitchen because I'm cooking. Okay. Mm. So there are things where you can be very active and actually put your heart rate up and actually get some serotonin out there and get some good times going. Without you, having to either pay a lot of money or, to make it a chore. Mm-hmm. So I think there are many times that we hear that we should do something. And even the way we hear it, oh, you need to be active. You really must go out there. You know, immediately some people say, well, fuck you. I tell you, I'll do what I do. Okay. So it is, if we can just actually educate people about the importance of being active within all means, of hydration, of nutrition. My goodness. Nutrition is such a key thing to our mental well-being. Ah, there are so many studies out there that beautifully show that. A Finnish study recently looked at the prison population, and they changed the slop they put onto the trays of their inmates. Mm-hmm. And once they actually really put some food onto the trays, the level of violence dropped by 30%.
Really?
Within a few days' time. So there is such a close link between nutrition and our mental health. And it's only recently, probably the last 10, 15 years, that doctors increasingly understand that.
Mm.
If you imagine you've got about 1.5 kilogram of nervous tissue in your head, you've got about 1.5 kilogram of nervous tissue in your gut, surrounding the gut. So when you're talking about gut feeling, there's actually something really to be said about that.
Yes.
And many of those substances that we really love, like the serotonin as a neurochemical, they are created in the gut. Mm. If we don't have a protein rich diet, if we don't have a diet that, or I call it a food plan diet, sounds like die. Sounds like, I don't want a diet. I don't want a kale leaf. And let's call it a food plan, something that sustains you for the rest of your life. If you don't have enough protein and the right proteins, high quality proteins in your nutrition, you don't have the base amino acids from which serotonin is developed. Well, surprise, surprise, that you might actually feel a bit low. If you have got certain types of diets like vegan, you're probably more likely that you're short on certain vitamins and certain amino acids. Again, you're probably setting yourself up to more issues with your mental health. We begin increasingly see those kind of problems. And we see a nation and a worldwide population that is stuffed full of antidepressants. Mm. And often enough, we see people who actually want to come off these antidepressants and go through horrendous times, mm-hmm. because their body actually has been told, because some extra stuff is coming in, we don't need to make all the extra stuff. So their own serotonin production is down. And they certainly don't have the awareness, their doctors not necessarily have the awareness that a certain nutrition is needed to actually boost those kind of neurochemicals up. And therefore, people end up in trouble. So I think we could deal with so many problems at the root cause if we were to focus on nutrition, exercise, hydration, and sleep as our core, and really not just pay lip service, but actually go out there and do it. This would dramatically change the suffering of many people out there. Right. I think, and no tablet was harmed in the making of this success. And with that, I'm a doctor, for Christ's sake. I use tablets all the time. So I say nothing against antidepressants. In the right place, right time, right person, with the right supervision, they are often lifesavers. They're amazing. And please, say nothing against it. But right. What I say is, if we actually work on the root causes, by addressing adverse childhood experiences, by addressing the brokenness or the lack of insight towards our negative emotions, etc. If you could address that plus a healthy baseline plan, my goodness, this world would be a different place.
So say somebody comes to you and they say they're broken. What's a good baseline plan for them to start immediately taking action in?
Well, first of all, I think when they come to me, well, they often come to me because literally they are broken, because they have just done something stupid to their shoulder and now need a new shoulder or need to have their back fixed. So as an anesthetist, I see them all the time. And I think it's there where I've got the power of planting the first seed. Mm-hmm. And actually to say, hey, man, I often compare their new challenge with actually something very positive. Here in New Zealand, where I at the moment live, it's a very staunch society. Men define themselves by working and women work. We are workers. And then suddenly they have got a buggered shoulder and they will be after surgery. They will be in a sling for 6 weeks. Otherwise they don't heal. And for them, the world stops. They don't know what is happening. My God, I've worked for 40 years. That's the only thing they know. Who are you? Well, I'm a fencer. I'm a whatever. Right. I'm a hardworking man. And suddenly you take that away from them. And that is fuck. So therefore I say, well, okay, now you've got some time to think. Who do you want to be when you grow up? And to actually start with that, to actually say, okay, fine, draw a baseline, see where you are right now. Mm. Often enough, because they've been working all the time, they have not seen their GP, their family physician. And I think that is so important. You need to have a good relationship with your GP. So I think that would be the very first thing. So whilst I'm talking functional medicine and wider holistic approach, you still need to rule out the bad shit. You can't just say, okay, I haven't worked out now for 30 years. I want to now go into a powerlifting contest because I like to challenge myself.
Right.
And meanwhile, your blood pressure is 220 over 120 because you've developed high blood pressure. And the next thing is you blow a gasket during the competition. Well, that doesn't go well, does it? So you're drooling with your stroke. Not so nice. So therefore, let's do some baseline health checks on you. Make sure that you're actually safe to go to the gym, that you're safe to go for a run, etc. And then you need to learn. Once you've dealt all with the not so nice things like diabetes and those things that crawl up on you, then now that you've got a baseline, now you can start actually working and see what is safe. What can I do? Your GP might have started you on a blood pressure medication that is too powerful. Mm-hmm. So if you now say, hey, great, I go for a run. Next thing is your face planting because your blood pressure dips. So it's those kind of things. So sort out the nasty shit and then surround yourself with people who are further down the path with you. There's a beautiful saying, if you surround yourself with 6 millionaires, you're going to become a millionaire. There's no way around it. If you surround yourself with 6 real estate investors, you will sooner or later have 2 free houses. If you surround yourself with 6 idiots, and that's, we often choose, we are not living intentional. We just let life happen. Whilst if you were now to actually surround yourself with people and with messages that are positive, where you start automatically learning and being encouraged to live a different lifestyle, well, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. So, and if that is a gym fraternity, if you fit into that, that's absolutely fine. This might be for you. This might start with an AA meeting because maybe the sobriety needs to be first attacked, or NA as a Narcotics Anonymous or Overeaters Anonymous, or any kind of other help group that is specific for the main problem that you're facing at the moment. But it's very likely that this problem is only a sign of underlying other things that need to be dealt with. So I often say that trauma comes in layers. And healing comes in layers as well. So you need to start somewhere. And I think a GP is a good person to start with, because they know the lay of the land. They know, most of us are not so really so well off. They know maybe, a funded solution, a counselor, a whatever meeting group that is there that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. Mm-hmm. You basically go on this path, but if you try to do it all alone, you're pretty stuffed. Why do you want to reinvent the wheel? Why do you want to reinvent fire? When actually, people around you can teach you far more effectively and tell you about the positive things that they've experienced and those things that didn't work for them. Now, it's important to realize whatever works for one person might not necessarily be the right thing for you, mm-hmm. or it might not be the right thing for you now.
Right.
So I needed to get rid of the alcohol first. So I needed to get sober first. That was my initial challenge. And then I had to learn how to live again, and actually figure myself a bit more out. And there's a lot of trial and error there. But that was my journey. But for example, the PTSD, I only dealt with, probably 5 years later, when it became, more clear to me what was actually going on. And it was spooky because it was a colleague of mine who fell apart with PTSD. He was ex-special forces, and he really lost it at one stage. So he was a bit off. He came back and said, look, Stefan, it's all good. It's going to be all fine. And looked at me in that funny way, and I thought, oh, shit.
Yeah, right.
What are you trying to do? And he said, no, I've found this coach, and she's helped me, and you're going to be fine. And in my mind, I was saying, yeah, what a bullshit. And automatically I went through the checklist for PTSD. Mm-hmm. And as I sort of ran him through it, I realized that I was running myself through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh shit. Okay. So I observed him, and really within a week, he was back to 90%, 95%. And I thought, okay, tell me, who did you meet and what did you do? And what was, mm-hmm. tell me more.
Yeah, right. What's the secret?
And well, exactly. And in this particular case, and her approach was that of a very good way of asking questions and then offering hypnotherapy as part of the treatment. And within 3 sessions, many of my symptoms had disappeared. So I was extremely lucky there because I found a really good person and with a modality that suited me immediately from the word go. So, wow. So this was nice, but
I hate to interrupt you real quick. What were some of those symptoms that immediately changed or just relieved themselves?
I think the main thing was the 4 o'clock in the morning awakening with the worst of Stefan, kind of thing. This was sort of part of my horrible, horrible nights. And it was never sort of blood and gore, but it was sort of really, negative dreams. And, oh my God, weird shit. So that quickly improved. And it was the flashbacks. I would so many times drive, and suddenly would go as if someone punches you in the gut. Mm-hmm. It would have been a memory that suddenly came back of something stupid, how I talked to a girl when I was 18. But I would still relive it there and then, like a physical trauma being hit in the gut. And often enough, my kids were saying, oh, tell us, where did you fuck up? Come on. So they realized it was these kind of flashbacks there because I explained it to them. And these, they are gone pretty much. I can't actually remember the last time that I had such a emotional or physical response to a memory.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this uncoupling between memories and a physical reliving of this response.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really beautiful. These were the two things that really were not nice for me. There are some aspects that I like of PTSD. My hypervigilance. And I actually don't like the word hypervigilance. That means it's too high. I actually like situational awareness. I'm the guy who sits with the back to the wall in a restaurant, knows where the exits are, and knows probably how to handle himself. Is that really such a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing.
Exactly. In a world that really goes tits up. No, there is. I mean, I'm living proof. Violence can be there at any one second, any one moment. You might as well be prepared for it, just as much as you should know how to change a tire, or you should know first aid, because you know sooner or later some shit will happen and you have to change a tire. You better know what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing as I see it with my life. So this situational awareness I'm proud of, and I think it makes me a good doctor, because it's hard for you to catch me out. So that's nice. But when that becomes too much, that you're constantly looking around like a mad dog, well, that's when it gets too much. So I like that raised level of situational awareness where I am at. And I think I'm happy with that level. And I think that's the key thing. Only because you have a symptom does not necessarily mean that it's something bad. You can actually reconstruct it and actually make it something positive for you. And I think that was to have this kind of really lovely reality check when it comes to PTSD. I nowadays call PTSD my superpower, not something that was nearly destroying me.
Right.
And that's a very, very big change, especially if you truly believe it. And if you actually put your money where your mouth is. And with that, I come back to the healthy lifestyle, the attention to good nutrition, to hydration, etc. Because if your body is not hydrated, it will feel, oh my God, within 2-3 days, I will die now. My God, come on, wake up, Stefan, wake up. You need water. But so you've got this raised level of anxiety there just from being dehydrated. And then you've eaten shit. So your body actually wants to tell you, hey, man, I need some vitamin C. I need some vitamin D. Can you just go out there, get some good stuff? But it's as if your body is talking Mandarin to you and you have no idea what? And
it is talking to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all the time.
The negative emotions, if I feel a negative emotion nowadays, I see it as a message from my body that I did not pay attention to my well-being. And I think that as a rule of thumb, that served me very well.
Mm. Yeah, you talk about this, and I agree 100%. Love it, is your daily challenges. Just everything is meant, like, how you look at it is meant to build you up. And when you can see it like that, life just becomes so fucking beautiful.
True. Like, I agree.
It's amazing. Like, you talk about the anger. Like, if you're strong, something makes you angry. Like, what is the hidden message? Maybe that message is for you to make something better.
Correct. I like that. I like that a lot. Although, it's hard when that emotion hits you. And I often compare that with a wave in the ocean. We often don't like our emotions, but if you were to swim in the ocean and there's this big wave coming towards you, you can be angry about that wave. You can say, you wave, stay away. I hate you. That wave is coming. Okay. So you might as well learn either to surf it or dive underneath it or feel the power of it if you're in the surf and it throws you around. The wave doesn't care. And it's also this wave of neurochemicals that is washing over you, as anger or as sadness, etc. The wave doesn't care. It will come, but it will also go. So it's good to understand that.
Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, you definitely have to have self-awareness to make it, but here's a better question. How does one become self-aware?
Tiny steps in the right way. You would never go in the gym and throw yourself with some weights around for 30 minutes and then think, wow, cool. Now I'm going to fit for life. Look, yeah, I did it. So no, there will be. It's very hard to answer this question because we all have different starting points. And for each and every one of us, that might be a different answer. Having said that, I think one of the key things for lifting your level of awareness is to actually disconnect for a time being. Disconnect, and actually calm your mind down. So actually switch your phone off. Switch all the electronics off. Even better, get out of the house if it is safe to do so, and go somewhere into nature. And actually just find a nice place, find a nice comfortable position, and just close your eyes and just focus on your breathing. Do nothing else. Just focus on your breathing. Learn how to breathe. Learn how to diaphragmatically breathe. So do your tummy breathing, where every breath that comes in actually brings your tummy out. And then when you breathe out, your tummy comes back in. So you're mainly focusing low down. And with that, you're stimulating the vagus nerve and the parasympathetic nervous system, that kind of the opposite to fight and flight. So by you just focusing on your breathing and disconnecting for a bit, you will find yourself coming into a rhythm. And if you now are in this position, you can see which kind of thoughts are coming into your mind. And ultimately, what you're doing is essentially a meditation. I just haven't told you that you're meditating. You're basically just actually looking after yourself, and you're switching off for a moment. And I think if we put such time spans into our life where we actually are calming down and where we're actually paying attention to messages that come out of us, These are thoughts that are coming through your mind, where suddenly you think, huh, because your body often knows answers to problems. You're just so bloody busy, or you're running away from things so much that you don't listen to these answers. And so often when you actually just stop and breathe, and suddenly I get an idea where you think, huh, that's a solution to that.
Right.
At other times, you might see that your mind is just raising. And that's cool. That's absolutely fine. This is basically, today is maybe not the best day today, but just keep breathing. Just 5 minutes. That's it. And you very soon get a hang of it. You might want to learn a bit more about breathing. You want to learn a bit more also how to stretch your body, how to use certain activities to release tension within your body. So this might be yoga. And when I say yoga, this is sort of often enough men say, yeah, right, come on, lycra pants, bullshit. I recently became a yoga instructor, and I'm 57. Fuck's sake, I'm stiff as a brick, okay? But that doesn't mean to say that I can't use the principles of yoga and the principles of especially flexibility yoga to actually release tension, to change my physiology, to actually therefore release some of the issues that lie in the tissues, okay? So we see often enough physical problems that are actually caused by mental problems. And by addressing some of the physical characteristics of your body, by using the parasympathetic nervous system actively to heal and restore, suddenly things change. And suddenly there might be tears coming out. You think, what the fuck? I've just done a yoga session. Why am I crying? Well, that's actually something that is not so uncommon. Because many of us don't take the time out. And when you do yoga or any other kind of slow motion activities, you give the mind a chance to catch up with you and maybe to release some of the tension. Maybe you find a reality check that then leads to a wave of emotions washing over you.
You know, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because I'm such a huge believer in just walks, you know, just like just going to take a walk, and it's amazing the things that hit you in your mind, like how much clarity you have. It's funny that you mentioned that, because the slow motion activity.
If you think about it, there is actually a way of thinking of walking as a form of meditation. Equally, long distance runners sometimes come into this kind of meditation trance that maybe fueled a bit by endogenous opiates, thing. But I mean, most of us are not in that state that we can reach that release of endorphins, unless you've trained for a long time. And so, no, I don't think that is accessible easily. There's these kind of runner highs, but the sheer fact that you're actually providing oxygen to your brain, that you're disconnecting from electronics, that you're out there in the outside, that you're reconnecting with energy that is inevitably out there, it's beautiful. So yeah, I 100% agree. Any kind of activity is of benefit, but if you can do the activity actually in nature or outside, certainly this would be an added benefit.
Right. Yeah, how many people have complained after going through a walk, like a trail, came back like, yeah, you know, I wish I didn't fucking do that.
Yeah, exactly. Touché.
Yeah, no, I mean, every time, like, I've done it, or I've, you know, talked to friends after they've done it, they're like, I feel so good. Like, just amazing. Isn't what it? Are we going to do tonight? And it's like, it's amazing how that just uplifts them.
Yes, there was this uplift. There was a calmness there. Suddenly, if you ask them the next morning, hey, how did you sleep? Oh, brilliant. Unless you were camping on some bloody rocky thing. But, you know, you feel better. And it's a flow on effect. And if you now do that again, but maybe add now another dimension to it, add in maybe now a different nutrition. So in the morning, instead of getting yourself a hamburger, you might actually say, okay, fine. What are you eating there? Okay. And you look over the shoulder of someone who actually knows a bit about nutrition and they say, come on, I'll make you something too. And boom, next thing you've eaten something that you maybe would have not considered before. And you think, oh, that's actually quite nice. You know, and it is, and you learn a little bit more about food. And then you hear something, oh, you should eat the rainbow. Eh? What? And then you learn suddenly that there are all these beautiful colors in our food. They actually come with various benefits. And then you suddenly might say, well, okay, I actually do like a bit of porridge in the morning. So that's oats, which are healthy. Okay. But maybe I do the oats. And what was to happen if I put some blueberries in there? Or I've got some protein powder there. I heard about that. These proteins are actually quite good, especially certain essential amino acids. And then you look at the protein powder and think, oh, that's actually quite cool. Whoosh in there. And suddenly you've got a power porridge. Add a bit more of fiber in there. Add a bit more this, bit more that. Suddenly you've got a kick-ass breakfast where your body says, what is that? I like it.
Right.
So... And because you've put lots of water in there, you're hydrating. So you have slept better. You've had some exercise. It looked after your nutrition. Wow. Right. You've taken action and you're no longer the victim. You're no longer passively just floating like a cork on the surface of the ocean. No, you're actually starting to stir towards a different version of yourself. And it's that kind of, this kind of change from having a dream, which is sort of quite vague, turning that into a vision, which is crystal clear. And then by taking action, you turn it into a mission. Mm. And I think that's where people like you and I are on this path. We are taking action and every single day. Now, most of the time, probably we're doing not too badly. Sometimes we go two steps back. Sometimes there will be not so good days where you say, oh, come on, bring on that pizza. Right. But if you were to analyze our decision-making processes during the day, it's likely that far more times we try to listen to our body and far more times we try to be proactive in doing something good for the body than maybe many others. And because of that, I think we are more resilient. We are more self-aware. And it's a process where you learn. And a process where very quickly, if I was to eat two, three dishes in a row that are not so healthy, my body says, what are you doing? And I become not so, you know, there's clearly something not right. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. It's the same with hydration. This morning, the very first thing I did before my feet hit the ground, I drank a large bottle of water. Down it went. Just rehydrated. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a routine I try to do every morning so that I'm not running around dehydrated. Because as soon as I get going, well, I love my coffee. Okay. So, and I probably drink a bit more than I should. But I at least want to make sure that I hydrate together with it and that I do the right things. So where to start? I think bottom line is there is no right answer, but right now for you, if you were to just stop and feel, stop and think, just focus on your breathing, just stop for a bit, the message and the answer will come to you. Mm. And you might decide, okay, wow, actually, I know very little about exercise. So maybe you want to learn a bit from a podcast, which doesn't cost you much, or anything. So, or YouTube, find yourself some people that you can gel with and learn more. And then once you've got a bit more insight and then you decide, well, okay, I actually want to go walking or I might want to go running. Well, don't just buy yourself some trainers and go running. Maybe find a group or find a trainer who can help you and who can fast track your efforts and make sure that you don't hurt yourself. It's those kind of things. Surround yourself with a team with a power team where you are the dumbest member of the team. And if you do that, there is no holding you back because you constantly get infused. You constantly get pulled towards a different version of yourself. And I think that is such a beautiful way of living. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Mm. That's so powerful, right? That's why, you know, I have to say that I'm in love with your message of the simplicity, you know, because there's just how you put it. If just small daily action steps, how you say, just drinking a bottle of water when you wake up, and just going for like maybe a 30-minute walk. And then having a little bit of like a breakfast with, you know, a smoothie or whatever, you're going to be on fire throughout the whole day. And you're going to get that message. Why the fuck have I not done this more often in my life?
and it will change. And there are different times in your life. There will be different challenges. 2023 was a bitch for me, an absolute bitch. I ended up with a lot of negativity, ended up with a lot of not nice things, new trauma, basically. And it wasn't easy at all. But my goodness, I would have likely fallen apart far more so than I did had I not paid attention to the very basics. But by doing the basics right, I gave myself that little uplift. Mm-hmm. I celebrated the tiny little wins that I had. Hey, look at that. You've just eaten something really, really healthy. Well done. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Later, you're going to park your car furthest away from the supermarket. So you put in those extra steps in. And so on. Little decisions throughout the day that are so powerful.
Mm.
The last thing I want to leave you guys with is the power of your thinking. Mm-hmm. If you were to think, let's ask you, Brett, any idea how many thoughts do you have in a day?
Wow. I mean, there's at least 70,000. I think that's the.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Exactly. These are the figures that I sort of said between 10 and 70,000. Mm-hmm. That's a hell of a lot of thoughts.
Right.
Okay. So if I was to ask you, tell me one clear thought from yesterday. Can you repeat one thought that you can really put your fingers on?
Is that rhetorical or are you?
No, I'm asking myself and I'm asking you. One or two I can think about just because they stuck in my mind, about some breakthroughs I had yesterday. Mm-hmm. But that's one or two out of 10,000, probably more, I think. So there's so much that is happening in our body and in our mind, and we're just letting it pass by. I think by you living more intentional, it also means maybe that you want to record things in a different way, that you may wish to write things down. Good ideas, plans, goal setting, that you actually live more intentional by literally also putting a plan in place, how you want to do it. And with that, I don't mean New Year's resolutions. Today is the 7th here in New Zealand. So by now, probably 90% of New Year's resolutions have gone down the gurgler. No one gives. Exactly. That's already all gone. The reality is what I want you to do is I want you to draw a baseline and actually see, okay, who am I now? And who do I want to be in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months? And we often, overestimate what we can do in a year, and we underestimate what we can do in 5 years. So by you actually planning things out and actually putting your thoughts in a controlled direction and your actions into the same direction, that is where the magic starts. Because you're actually looking at the big things first and try to look at the big things. Try to address those things that hand on heart you really ought to. So maybe you have no clue about finances and you're really financially that has always been holding you back. Maybe now is a good time to actually put a 3 month, 6 months, 12 months plan in place to actually say, well, how can I learn a bit more about creating a budget for myself? How can I look at getting more money or losing less money? And it's amazing once you start doing small steps in one direction, let's say finances. I call it the 5 minute gardener. Imagine you've got a garden and from now on, you spend every day 5 minutes in your garden. Never more, never less. 5 minutes.
5 minutes in the dark.
Doesn't matter what in your garden, wherever, in a garden. And whatever you do, one day you do 5 minutes pulling weeds, 5 minutes. Next day is you're putting some seeds in the ground and pruning something. Within a week, you see a difference. Within a month, your family says, wow, our garden looks nice. And within 3 months, you probably get bus tours coming along. Say, whoa, great garden. So it's the consistency that you don't need massive, massive steps, but you need consistent small steps into the same direction. And that is the power of compound interest. Now, if you do that with your garden, you very quickly have got some yummy vegetables coming onto your table. So that ticks off the garden, ticks off the nutrition, ticks off the being in the light, a lot of positives there. But imagine you do that now with a relationship. Every day, 5 minutes with maybe a strained relationship, a strained relationship with someone, maybe your parents or your significant other. And you actually do 5 minutes and one day you read 5 minutes about love languages. And tomorrow you maybe 5 minutes where you try a love language. The next day you just 5 minutes of being of service to the other person. Can you imagine that after a week, your relationship has changed?
Wow. Yeah. Just 5 minutes of giving yourself to the other person. Wow. Yeah. That's powerful. Yeah.
Okay. So these are the things. And that is our privilege of choice. And many of us don't know that they have got this privilege. They only know it once it has been taken away, once a person has died or once their ability to do something is gone. Let's say you always wanted to catch up with a friend and then the friend emigrates and moves on the other side of the world. And you don't really see each other anymore. Things like that. It's your choice. It's the power of choice. It's your life. So no one forces you. Well, no, wrong. There are many things that force you one way or the other.
Right.
And many of these things we can do very little about, but it's our power to actually, reframe what is happening to us, see how much we let it really get close to us, if it is negative, or how much we can reframe it and actually say, okay, this is a a new challenge, and God, do I hate it. But I, A, will survive, and not just survive, I will thrive. But in order to do so, I need to do daily steps to look after myself. And it's again, that's where we are working out that muscle of self-love, that muscle of being kind to ourselves. And it is a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. You're shriveling away. Mm-hmm. And, however, if you daily practice, these principles, I think that's where the power comes in. And then you, one day you're doing it without even knowing. It becomes a habit where you don't have to think anymore. And that's really when you get into autopilot, when you start living your life in a consistent way that, is best described as making you more resilient and giving you a fair chance to, get ahead in whatever you put your mind to. Let it be a relationship. Let it be work. Let it be wealth. Let it be your health. So there's so many things. I mean, yeah, we have got such a beautiful body, and such a beautiful mind. Yes, the past is often not a very nice past, but the past does not equal the future. Let's be very clear about that. Right now, you guys, your audience, you listeners out there, you have spent an hour with us. Wow. You took massive action. You actually hung in there and listened to two of us rabbiting on here. But it is, you took action. Congratulations. So, you know, just now add another step where you say, okay, wow, this was quite cool. And you know, what else could I do? Maybe you guys could now press the like and subscribe button on, Brett's show and make sure that actually that you show your appreciation to us.
You hit that subscribe and like notification. You've written a book. You want to talk about that real quick, please? By all means.
Okay, up there. That is actually the cover from the second edition. We have just done the third and last edition of My Steps to Sobriety. The first edition was yeah, my little baby, and it was quite messy and quite chaotic, as little babies are. The second edition there, that was a teenager, which was still had a bit of a attitude. The third edition now is updated, especially to sort of show more up to date statistics of drinking and problems that we have faced, over the COVID, pandemic, et cetera. So it's basically making it simple approach to part share my story and let you learn lessons from, well, comparing with the hard lessons that I had to learn. Make it easier for you. And then I'm breaking down the 12 steps of the AA into a modern language, into a very practical ways forward. I try to demystify the 12-step program away from God or whatever sort of the negative thoughts that sometimes hold people back of seeking help. And in the third part of the book, I'm very much give you action plans for those things that are quite predictable, those challenges. Let that be that your finances turn sour, that you develop depression, PTSD, toxic relationships, those kind of things. There are certain things that are very predictable in life. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to actually just give you the facts about that and maybe some easy ways to address those things and maybe ways forward rather than let these things suddenly appear in your life and you feel like a 2x4 hit you and you have no idea what to do. So therefore I hope, My Steps to Sobriety will help many people out there to start their journey if sobriety and addiction is at the moment a key issue in their life. Having said that, it is also obviously for those people whose partners or sons or significant other is going through a hard time. So I think it's really the message of that book is hate the addiction, love the addict. and figure out what the hell is going on. And once you know more information, then you're far better armed and you're far better aware of the opportunities that are there to help. Mm. Whatever stress you're going through, there is help. There is hope. And I couldn't see that when I was in the darkness. And so many others can't see it because they're so overwhelmed with everything that is happening to them. And then that turmoil of emotions that's washing over them. And sometimes you're just completely paralyzed by fear, anxiety, sadness. And I want to send you that message, guys. This will pass. There is no two ways around it. Don't make permanent decisions for a temporary problem. And we are sometimes so good about that. Yes, you're going through a hard time, but there are very simple ways for you to get help that don't cost you a thing, that are actually not very painful. It's often we imagine, oh my God, I need to go to the GP and tell him about what I'm going through. My God, what will he think? What will society think of me when I actually open up about a problem, etc.? Guess what? Society typically knows if you have been drinking like a fish, then they know that you're in trouble. If you have been depressed and let out your anger on everyone else around you, well, guess what? They've figured out that you're not very well. So you might as well address those things and get the help that you deserve and get the help that is out there. And you just don't know it. You just think that you're alone. And that's not true. This is a lie that mental health problems tell us, let it be addiction, depression, etc.
Mm. Very, very true. Do you have time for one more question? Because this is like...
Shoot. Oh, shoot. Please.
Do you think all... do you think all mental health problems come from interpersonal relationships?
No. There are some mental health issues that are hardwired in us. For example, 10% of people will have a personality disorder. So they will be wired in a very different way. And there are different personality disorders, but with different characteristics. But yeah, there is no one else involved, but that person is set up in a specific way to respond to the environment. So there is that. We've got 1% of the population who are sociopaths and psychopaths. Complete different kettle of fish now. So again, we have not actually brought any kind of other person in there. These are just genetically or just from our development point of view, how these people are out there. There is very much not just our here and now that matters. It's often a generational issue as well. We have got studies nowadays that prove very much that the suffering of one generation is handed down to the next generation and the next generation. Mm-hmm. Beautiful study of mice, rodents, which were kept in a cage and they were exposed to cherry flavor, just some smell of cherries. And every time that the cherry flavor came, they got electric shocks. So they linked in their brain, cherry flavor, electric shock, not good. So then they stopped that part of the experiment. The mice did what mice did, have romantic parties, and a new generation of mice was created. Mm-hmm. Now, this same the next generation of mice was put in the same cages, the experimental cages, and the cherry flavor was wafted over them. And they ran away from the metal. Mm-hmm. So the children, the baby mice, had never been exposed to that cherry flavor, yet they knew the cherry flavor is not good for you. Mm. So here you are. You had basically trauma laid down genetically as an information down. Now, if you go back, I mean, my parents Parents were probably all right, but grandparents, my goodness, they have gone through hell and back, being German, First World War, Second World War, all the trauma that was there, being refugees, being having some very traumatic experiences. They will be there. And if you go back in your history, there will be trauma there in generations. So these kind of things play a role. When you say, with regards to, please rephrase or tell me again your question, with regards to the relationships, you asked them in a specific way. Yeah.
Do you think if mental health issues stem from interpersonal relationships? The question was all, but now that it's probably the better question is most.
Most. I think it takes two to tango. Let's put it like that. Our life, we don't live our life in isolation. So there will always be other people that are involved. And many people mean well, but the outcomes of what their actions are will put strain on you. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, that will be always a challenge. It will always be other people, how they affect you, that will always be a factor in your mental health. Again, we can't do, no, that's actually wrong. I was about to say you can't do much about a toxic relationship, but you can do a hell of a lot. That's one of my chapters in my book, where I say, no, okay, that is, if it is a relationship in which you can't get out, let's say a workplace, there are ways how to deal with toxic people. And once you know about this way of dealing with such toxic people, it makes it so much easier. You're suddenly back in power. You're back in the driver's seat rather than being the victim of a relationship. You learning more about different relationship types and about different behaviors. You might recognize suddenly a narcissist, in all his or her glory there. And then suddenly a lot of things become very clear to you, and you can then behave in a very different way. So this is a learning curve. And are all or most mental health problems linked with interpersonal relationships? No. No, I would say it's so multifactorial. Right. These interpersonal relationships have a huge role to play in some people, but some people, they just have maybe, I'll give you an extreme example. If I just create a diet and that is absolutely shit for you, and make sure that you do not get certain vitamins, make sure that you do not get certain things, I can create a depression. I don't need anyone else to interfere there. I can make you depressed. So therefore, just taking that extreme example, no, we don't need another person to fuck things more up. But I think, yes, if you can surround yourself with people that are more aligned to the person that who you want to become, I think that will be the powerful thing to do. You might have to jettison, you might have to get rid of some relationships, of some people in your life that do no longer benefit you, or that maybe want to draw you back into a lifestyle that you don't like. Mm-hmm. Let that be fellow addicts, fellow drinkers, fellow naysayers. There are a number of very toxic people out there. If you surround yourself with them, then, oh God, it's so much harder for you to remain an even keel and a good mental health.
Right. For sure. Stefan, where can people find you?
If you head over to nefinspiration.com. In the past, I had a website, My Steps to Sobriety, but I'm moving over because the sobriety was something that was very much in the forefront of my endeavors to teach about those things. Having said that, now there is so much more. I want to inspire you to live a life that suits you, and sobriety might have nothing to do with that. You might have not been touched too much by negative coping mechanisms, but there might be other things that are an issue. Yet, it's the same root cause approach that we have for most problems. Let there be medical problems or psychological problems, mental health problems. There is certain behaviors, certain steps that we all can take that will set you up to live your life to the fullest. And that's what I want to do. That's where my show is, my show, NEF Inspiration, is as a podcast and as YouTube show. That is where my social media is there. So it is, 2024 will be a very beautiful year because I will be so much more active there because I want to leave a legacy. I want to impact people. I want to on my deathbed say, okay, you lived your life to the best, to the fullest. Yes, you made mistakes, but, you gave it a damn good try. Mm. And I think that is what I want to do, mm-hmm. live my life to the fullest and share my vision, share the insights that I've got. So yeah, NEF Inspiration, check me out, on the social media and on nefinspiration.com.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on. This was an amazing conversation.
Brett, it is an honor to be a guest on your show. Thank you very much for providing this platform, for helping so many people out there by just exposing them to such wonderful ideas. Brett, you're an amazing man, and don't stop anytime soon. Have you figured out who you want to be when you grow up?
Oh, without a doubt. I don't think we're too far apart with that, wanting to leave a legacy.
Excellent.
And just inspire.
Actually, guys, if you're still listening, I think Brett will very soon shed a bit more light onto that when he is coming as a guest onto my show. It would be very rude of him not to turn up, wouldn't it?
All right. wouldn't it?
So here we go. Brett, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Guys, please go check him out. This has been one of the best conversations I've had. Thank you so much.
Look after yourself.